FYLP is sponsored by CapturedPrey.com. Visit CapturedPrey.com today for all your import and third-party Transformers needs, and save even more through the Captured Prey Loyalty Program. You can also save on shipping on domestic orders of $150 or more. See website for details. CapturedPrey.com. Great toys, great prices, great service. Mega Toy Fan. Maximize your collection with MegaToyFan.com for all your vintage toy needs. You can also find Mega Toy Fan at popular robot and toy conventions year-round. Minimize your costs and maximize your collection with MegaToyFan.com.
In a cold, faraway world, a battle is raging between evil and good. From the stones.
Perceptia here. Welcome to Transformers for your listening pleasure. TFYLP for short. Join us and discuss the latest in Transformers fandom. Now, where did I put that chorus stop?
Right here. Will you take the chorus stop?
Transformers! Defenders of truth! Robots who fight!
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Transformers for Your Listening Pleasure, TFYLP, episode number 218, recorded September 24th, 2016. I'm your host, Ron Land, a.k.a. Weird Wolf. Along with me this evening is Jim Black, a.k.a. Moroni Prime.
Hi.
Hi. Hopefully, you do sound a little bit low, Jim, but hopefully you're coming through your mic level is coming up on me whenever you come, whenever you speak, so hopefully everybody can hear you. Also with us is Rick Alvarez, a.k.a.
Yes!
Rick Alvarez.
I am back. Sorry to all my fans that I couldn't be on the show last week. I was busy with an elephant, an actual living elephant.
A living elephant?
I was busy with an elephant, yeah. I got to ride the elephant and everything. It was a lot of fun.
Was there an elephant in the room?
And it's totally not a euphemism.
No, I was not out. It was not in a. It was outdoors.
The elephant.
Well, I do want to start off things by saying that I do apologize for the audio problems that we had last week. You know, everything was sounding great on our end, but apparently for the listeners, everybody could hear me just fine, but everybody else was like really, really low. We're still working on the audio from that episode. Hang Yip Chan has got it. He's got some software that kind of go through and manually lift everybody up to where they're about my level on audio. Do apologize for that. I'm doing a little something different this week. I think I knew what the problem was once the show was over. I realized, but at that point it was too late to fix. So hopefully everything is good right now. If not, please let us know. I'll try to do something different. I mean, like, again, I said last week, this is a growing process. You know, Google kind of left us out there. I know they give us an option, but it's not really an option like we were used to. So we're trying to do something a little bit different, and I just hope this is working. But we're trying to put out the best show that we possibly can for you listeners, and bring to you the show that you've come to expect from TFYLP. You know, like I said, growing pains, it's not going to be perfect, and just kind of bear with us, and, hopefully we'll get all this stuff hammered out and everything will return to normal. But this week, our topic is what makes a Transformers toy good. And I'm not talking about any specific line or any specific figure. Each one of us has a different opinion on what makes a Transformers toy good. You know, and you can find varying opinions depending on where you go, what you talk, who you talk to in the fandom. You can go to a message board. You can go to a convention. And everybody has their idea of what makes a great Transformers toy. You know, what's a great toy for one person sucked for another, and vice versa. You know, I have figures that I love. I mean, I have this strange fixation for this quirky little yellow and blue dude here named Weird Wolf. You know, I mean, it's he's not exactly a perfect toy. He's chunky. He's, you know, he's quirky and weird. But I love the simplicity of his transformation. I love the character that is portrayed in his bio. He didn't have a whole lot of characterization in the American cartoon, but in the Japanese cartoon, he had somewhat of a important role. So he's special to me, and I've come to love the character. But there's other people that could give two flying craps less about Weird Wolf. You know, and everybody has their favorite figure. Everybody has that idea of what they think makes a great toy. Tonight, we're going to be focusing on not necessarily what makes a great character, but a great toy. You know, sometimes gimmicks impede the toy's playability, posability, and everything, but sometimes a gimmick makes a toy fun. Headmasters and the Master lines are a good example of that. I know a listener, I forget the name right off the top of my head, but earlier this week, he was talking about how much he loves the Masters, the Power Masters, the Headmasters, the Target Masters, and how much a fun play pattern that was. And it wasn't so much to the point where it impaired the transforming ability of the toy. Yes, if you lost the partner, you know, Power Masters were a little bit more difficult to transform. Headmaster would be a headless robot, and the Target Master just wouldn't have a gun. But if you had the complete toy, it was a really fun play pattern, and the toys were generally good, sturdy toys. So be thinking about what you think is a favorite toy, what makes a great toy for you. And we'll talk about it throughout the show. If you have any comments or questions about what we're talking about tonight, you can tweet us at TFYLP on Twitter or post it in our Facebook group. I've been trying to pin it to the top of the group, but we are in episode 218. There's a thread started about it on there, and our own Sergio Garcia has already posted. The transformation is what makes it great for him. We'll go into a little bit of that. But so I'd like to hear.
I guess he's not an Action Master fan.
No, we'll go into you guys. What do you guys think makes a great Transformers toy, Rick?
Well, I think this is a very broad subject, I would like to even see it broken down into categories, such as, hey, what was a great toy for the 80s versus a great toy for the 90s? Because they're a very different style of figure. So if I were to say, hey, let's start off in the 80s, I would say that the relevance of the character on the television series was what made it important to me if there was fiction attached to it. So Optimus Prime was a very important toy for me as a kid because of the role that he had on the show. But if you look at that toy today compared to other anything else today. I mean, he doesn't have the ratchet joints. He doesn't have the ball joints. He doesn't have the standard articulation. So, and this is stuff as a parent that I think about, like, as my kids get older, are they going to appreciate the toys that I appreciated as a kid? You know, how will they look at these figures? I tend to love stuff that's simple. That's from the 80s and 70s. I was born in 79, but I still have plenty of figures from the 70s and a few figures from the 60s, Major Matt Mason, that I collect because they're simple and I like them. I like the simplicity in them. So to me, I think there's an innocence in having a simple toy that allows you to express imagination that today's toys, with their gimmicks, are kind of forcing onto you. And I don't mean Headmasters or Target Masters so much that as a gimmick, but the spring-loaded missile huge launcher pack that the G.I. Joe figures from the movies had, or
Mech Tech,
yes.
Automorphs
type stuff. I mean, that I think takes away from the transformation, from the ability to be creative and imaginative with play. And that's what I tend to impart upon my children, is that these figures can be anything you want them to be. And I'm very proud of my daughter, who just turned 5, who she has a Castle Grayskull, which she uses as Rapunzel's tower because she doesn't have a Rapunzel's tower.
That's awesome.
And Flynn Rider will drive up with Rapunzel in the Thunder Tank to the tower. And I love that. I love that she can take a toy from any genre, from any year, and have the creativity to have that toy enter the world that she wants it to enter and not feel limited. And I think today's toys are limiting how you can play with them, with what you can play with them. And I think that's all part of an evil marketing plan that that kind of traps people into buying more of the same product of the same brand.
I'm thinking there's a discussion that I had with someone. It might have even been on the podcast a long time ago. But one of the things that made Transformers appealing to me back in the 80s is they didn't look, for the most part, most of them didn't look exactly like they did in the cartoon. You know, we didn't have the masterpiece, great looking robot mode that looked like the cartoon and a vehicle that looked like a real car. The 84 cars and 85 cars, for the most part, did look realistic in some ways. But I think what was really appealing to me is that you could sit down and have a play battle with those toys and transform them from robot to vehicle in just a few seconds, you know, a few clicks. And I think the commercials that we saw, you know, where it showed click, 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 and then boom, you got a robot, you know, or a car. For the most part, the play pattern was like that back in the 80s, and it made the toys so fun. You know, you had your exceptions, like Six Shot and a few others, and, you know, Omega Supreme, which you virtually had to disassemble and then reassemble in a different form. But for the most part, they were really simple. Like I said, Weird Wolf here, you can transform him in, you know, a few seconds, you know. But then you fast forward to, say, like 2001, when we had RID on the shelves. And I dare anyone to sit down and transform Sideburn from car into robot in a few seconds. You know, it's going to take a minute or two. And whenever you're sitting down trying to play or have a play battle, it's really difficult to have a play battle whenever you're spending several minutes transforming each robot from one form to another. And it kind of kills the play value. I mean, it's cool to fiddle with, you know, and put on a shelf. It looks great. But I'm concerned about the play value of it. Is it quick to transform? You know, that's one of the things I like about the RID 2.0 line. Yeah, they're very simple, not overly complex, but they're fun little toys to play with. That's my opinion. I mean, what do you think, Jim?
Sorry, I was muted. I'll switch here. Honestly, as far as Rick's idea, that just blew me away. You know, with the Castle Grayskull and the Thunder Tank and Rapunzel, and all that, I would watch that. But as far as what I think makes a good toy, it varies greatly depending on what one the kid's into. You know, some kids, they're exposed to the line initially through like the comics. Like some of us, you know, G1, think of the comics as their G1 as opposed to ones that were exposed more to the cartoon. So I think the different characters and the different ways that they're developed, influence that. But also, like was said with the gimmicks, imaginative play, I think, is something that is sorely missing in modern lines. Play is almost predetermined in how they want you to interact with the toy. Not taking anything away from kids' imagination. Because if they want to, just make up their own scenario, they're going to anyway, and I'm sure lots of kids still do. But, I think gimmicks are a hindrance a lot of the time. Now when they're implemented in, things like Titans Return, for instance, where you have, you can do the head or, the smaller figure. I think that helps in a lot of ways because you can pick up the different heads at retail, the different Titan Masters, and switch them out however you want. Combiners, you can buy different limbs and mix and match. There's pros and cons to it, but as for me personally, I think probably transformation. I think takes precedence because ultimately, whether it's Armada or Classics or, any other line, they are ultimately Transformers and they need to, focus primarily on that as the main feature of the toy. Because, that's what they're called.
Listener Jay Boyd on YouTube, he commented, he says, as an adult, I love the complex transformations, but as a kid, I love the simple ones. I think you can appreciate both. And I stated, yeah, that is a good point. As a kid, I really appreciated the simpler transformations. But as an adult, I don't care how complex it is because I'm not sitting here on the floor, vroom vroom with them. I do enjoy, a good puzzle. I mean, for example, today... Well, yesterday, actually, I picked up KFC's Crash Hog, which is their masterpiece version of Wreck-Gar. And he is he's not, so complex that, oh my gosh, I can't figure this out. But there's some parts that are quite fiddly in his transformation. But I appreciate it. I mean, it's not so difficult I couldn't figure it out. And he looks great in both modes. But as a kid, I would have hated that toy because I can't transform it quickly. I can't sit and play with it. But, as a kid and as an adult, going back to what Sergio Garcia said, transformation is a good key thing. But saying that means that it's different as a kid and as an adult. We view it differently. You have thoughts on that, Rick?
Yeah, absolutely. I grew up an only child. I was very distant in age from my cousins, so I spent a lot of time playing by myself as a child. And I never ran into that situation of, this is taking too long for me to transform. I never thought about it, and I think about some of the Transformers I had as a kid, which take a little bit longer, like Fortress Maximus or maybe Metroplex, which can take a little bit to transform, or like Ultra Magnus. That was never an issue with me. Like, I need to get this thing transformed so we can battle this, but it's taking too long. I think as a kid, there's things that are frustrating. Revenge of the Fallen, Leader Class, Optimus Prime. I have a hard time with that toy. That thing is a pain in the butt to transform. Can only imagine what kids went through. And then having worked at Hasbro, I did hear a lot of feedback about that toy, that people were having issues with it. And it's mainly because of that figure that the intuitive transformation was developed. So as an adult, having the intuitive transformation is fun enough. Simple transformation to me is not entertaining now as an adult. Like the Little Legends figures, those really have no interest for me transformation wise, other than just put them on a shelf. They look nice. The end. I'm all about Generations figures and Masterpiece. And even with Masterpiece, if it takes too long to if it's so complicated that I have to sit there and look at the instructions every single time I transform it, I don't like it. I like to be able to play with it on my own, discover how it works. If I get stuck, I look at the instructions.
A good example of that for me was Fans Projects Diesel. That thing was so damn complex. It was just not a fun toy for me. Every time I had to convert it from, whether it be from truck to robot or robot to combined form, I had to refer to the instructions because it was just so, there was so much to it. It was just not fun.
Yeah. I'm getting an echo, Duran, when I speak. Do you hear that?
I'm actually muting my mic, so it's not coming from
okay.
me.
I was muted too, but I heard your echo there at first, but it seems like it's gone now.
Okay. All right, so we're okay. So simple transformation as a kid for me didn't matter. I don't know why that is. Maybe because I wasn't being pressured to transform something quickly, or I never thought about having to transform something quickly. As an adult, simple transformation is unintriguing, and I can't justify certain price points if I know certain figures lack a certain amount of parts for the transformation. That's why I kind of stick to Generations and Masterpiece, but at the same time with Masterpiece figures or third-party figures or leader figures, if I have to look at the instructions constantly to figure out how to transform something, then it loses its fun appeal. It may look cool on the shelf in robot mode or in vehicle mode, but it does lose something for me to transform the figures. Was it Green Giant? I bought the Green Giant set, the whole set in one box, opened the box up. I didn't even look at the instructions. I looked at that toy. I'm like, that looks really cool in robot mode. I looked at the instructions kind of, and I'm like, wow, that's just by looking at the toy and the amount of instructions that were there, I'm like, that's not something I really want to mess around with. So I just took it from the box, put it on my shelf, and called it a day. It looks cool, but it is missing that fun factor. I think there's got to be a mix between intuitive
so you never
and
transformed
that next
it?
Level. No, I'd never transformed it. That echo keeps coming back. No, so I've never transformed my Green Giant. But he looks cool on my shelf.
Another thing that has been brought up as a point of a point for people liking a Transformer is aesthetics. Does it look good in one mode or the other, or preferably both? You know, of course, Masterpiece, you know, that's what it that focuses on. But let's talk about the general release lines. You know, does it have those visual cues that you expect from a character? You know, a lot of us have criticized the movie lines for deviating from what we expect from a character. It's like, yeah, you've got, for example, Ironhide. You know, he didn't have the telltale Ironhide face or head. He wasn't even red in the 07 movie. Or, you know, there was a repainted toy that was red. But, you know, Hot Rod in the next movie, The Last Knight, doesn't even have a spoiler. He's not red, doesn't have flames that we know of yet. They may change that. But those are things that we expect as visual cues from a character to identify with the character. you know, if it's okay, in my opinion, if you change the general look of a character, but as long as you, there's visual cues there that says, oh, okay, that's Hot Rod. And the 07 Optimus Prime is a good example of that. They changed the overall appearance of Optimus Prime, but yet he still had the telltale Optimus Prime head. He had a battle mask that gave him the classic style face mask. He had the antennas, generally blue and red. So at least he had some visual cues that we could look at and say, oh, that's Optimus Prime. But what else do we think of whenever we look at aesthetics as a point of liking a toy and considering a toy good? Jim, you have any thoughts on that?
Well, as far as visual cues and things, you brought up, you know, Ironhide and Optimus, several of the movie figures from the Michael Bay films. And one thing that I kind of thought of, I don't know if anybody else really has, is if not taking the visual cues that we're accustomed to away, then concealing them, like leaving them in place, but leaving them very, very subtly or just barely there. One instance, you know, people complain about Bumblebee not having a mouth and having that vocalizer mask thing. And, you know, it occurs to me, it's like, if you look carefully at Bumblebee's face, you can actually see his mouth behind that, and he's, like, almost permanently smiling, and it is really disturbing looking. I mean, but you can make out the mouth behind that vocalizer. Or like Ironhide and Ratchet, you know, they were, like you said, a heavy deviation from what we're accustomed to in say, you know, the 80s cartoon, where, you know, Ironhide has the...
Saying that, I'm not saying that they had to be slavish to those, but at least give us... You know, if you're going to change the design of Ironhide, at least keep him red, you know.
Right.
That, you know, just something there to have some kind of attachment to the character.
Sure.
Instead of just, let's just reinvent like with, the
character. But with Ironhide and Ratchet, you know, if you look at their faces, you know, you look closely at how they're designed and shaped, they're almost the sticker faces from those toys. But as far as the series or comics, they have almost no cues from that. But that's like the only thing I can even think of as far as those two are concerned. But I do believe that, you know, those connections to those prior incarnations are vital to a point, because they help establish, you know, that connection to those childhood memories, you know, or just it helps you associate better with the character, I think.
You know, redesign, reinvent, rebuild, retake. I think there's got to be some... I think you guys are sticking too much to the past, and you got to allow for some movement forward. Despite what we may think about the designs for the films, that was the film's interpretation of the characters. I don't think that's anyone's ever going to say that's the definitive look of that character. That's the film. That's the way they look in the film. It will always be separate from what has come before. And that's just something I think most people should accept. It's different for a reason. I don't think everything needs to be exactly the same way it was as we were kids. I'm not a fan of the current Robots in Disguise series, but I look at that Grimlock and I'm like, that's a cool looking Grimlock. Mm-hmm. It's not a gray Grimlock. It's not silver. Or it's not in G2 colors. But that's a cool looking Grimlock to me.
R.I.D. colors.
It's its own thing, but it's still Grimlock. And I very much like that.
The truck.
Jay Boyd, he just stated on here, said the Bayverse is like a what if book for me. It's in Earth 2. If he would have changed his style up now, it would be like he sold out. And Michael Bay, in other words. But Yeah, I mean, that is a good take on that. I mean, if, you know, you look at it as like an alternate universe of the characters. I mean, they don't have to be the original characters. But what I'm saying is that I don't hate the characters because they don't look like the original characters. I don't like the new characters in the movies because I think the movies are horrible. I mean, it's just my opinion. But, you know, there's millions of people out there that completely disagree with me, especially the Chinese market, apparently. Yeah. But that being said, I'm just saying what my preference is. And that's the whole basis for this episode, is that everybody has their opinion on what makes a good Transformers toy. You know, and a lot of us say it in our with our wallets whenever we go to the store or buy online. What is a good toy to us? I particularly didn't care for a lot of the movie lines, but there was some gold in there. You know, we've mentioned before the Revenge of the Fallen Leader Prime. Even though it was really complex, it was still a beautiful toy. Jetfire from Revenge of the Fallen. So many others. Like I said, the little Legion or Legend size Dark of the Moon Hatchet. Love that little guy. You know, he's not overly complex. He's not big. But he's just cool. He looks good in both modes to me. But I know there's people out there that really don't care about it. You know, Rick, you what are your overall things on aesthetics? What does aesthetics mean to you as far as appeal of the toy itself? Is it a factor at all to you?
It is, but it isn't. And I guess the best way I could describe that would be with Generations. Because with Masterpiece, it's designed to look a specific way, and that way is based off what we saw in the 80s, either toy form or animation form. With Generations, if it's, you know, I'm all for redesign and reinvent, but at the same time with Generations, what Generations was at the start was bringing out those classic characters in new forms. But when they get away from the look of the character, see, now I'm contradicting myself. You know, all right, let me back up. Third party has had a huge effect on the way I collect and the way I look at aesthetics. If there's a third party version of a toy, let's say that, was it Tyrant, the Galvatron toy? It looks really cool, and that's what sits on my generation shelf. The Hasbro Generations Titan Returns figure, or the Deluxe Generations with the tank, they're cool in their own way, but that's not the significant, definitive toy for my shelf. Those are on different shelves over there, where there was some other stuff. It's got some He-Man, maybe some Ninja Turtles over there, whatever. On my generation shelf, I got the one that looks most like the original show. And it's not just because it looks like the show.
I have to admit, whenever I opened Tyrant, I cried a little bit because he was so beautiful.
Well, that toy kind of has it all. Yes, it looks like the show. And it's a classic character. It's Galvatron. But it also has that transformation quality. That's a really fun way of transforming a toy. So that plus the look of the toy have made it the definitive Generations version for my generation shelf. And the Titans Return Galvatron is cool, but if I only even have one Generations style figure on my shelf, it's going to be that Tyrant. Sometimes aesthetics don't matter if it's a character that has good fiction. And I've said this before on the show. Beast Wars Razor Beast. He's a little basic figure, turns into a boar. It was kind of a shitty toy. It just is. But it was, I think, the Dreamwave comic books that made him a central character, made him the star of the Beast Wars miniseries. And because that story was so good and because he was so pivotal to that storyline, he is one of my favorite toys as well. So it's a split between, hey, does it look cool and transform too in a cool way? All right, check. But even if it doesn't look really cool, even if it doesn't transform really cool, even if other people don't really find it valuable on the secondary market, is there a cool story behind it? Is there cool fiction? And I think a lot of those early Beast Wars toys are also testaments to that. Cheetor, Dinobot, Black Arachnia. They're not the best toys. They don't necessarily resemble the show very much. But that show was so good that it transcends what the figure was and elevates that figure to a higher level of desirability because of the fiction attached to it. Maybe that doesn't make sense to
No, that makes perfect sense. You know, I think whenever I think of aesthetics, here's a good example for me, the Duocons from Generation 1. Mm-hmm. Aesthetically, both of those guys are relatively ugly toys. Great head molds. I love the head molds. But they were stumpy. Both had giant feet, per se. Little bitty tiny arms that didn't even move. But they were fun toys. And this leads us into something that Turbo Blue Streak on YouTube mentioned. He says, I like unique transformations, like the asymmetric transformations of RID 2001. You know, that's what made the Duocons great for me, is that they took like the jump starter concept just a tad farther and made two vehicles that you just press together, and whenever you let up, they sprung into action and completely converted right before your eyes. And to me, that's why I love the Duocons. They were fun little toys. It's like you got this jet coming down, swooping down and hitting a tank, and then boom, he's a robot. And sometimes if you slammed it hard enough and let your hand up, he would literally do a backflip and still land on his feet in robot mode. I don't know how many times I did that, and that was just so fun. But like he said, the unique transformations of or the asymmetric transformations of RID 2001. You know, you had X-Brawn with a giant car hood on his right arm, and then he had just a normal fist on his left arm. You know, Sideburn with the asymmetrical head, and you know, he just had car parts hanging off of him everywhere. But they were still beautiful toys. Great to look at. You know, they're iconic now. You know, here we are 15 years later looking back at the original RID toys. And to me, a lot of those toys are iconic now. And like you said, Rick, the Beast Wars toys, iconic characters. They might not have had the greatest toys, but they were still fun to play with. Rat Trap didn't look exactly like the cartoon, but he had that little flip changer gimmick that made him a fun toy, you know.
You know, I wonder, I know we talked about this a little bit before, but I kind of wonder, like, what will my kids think of a G1 Ratchet? It doesn't have a head. There's a lot of imagination that goes into playing with that toy. What do my kids think of G1 Trailbreaker, where you got to put the fist in, or G1 Starscream, where you got to take parts off and then switch them around, put the parts back on? I wonder if there's any listeners out there who are younger, maybe millennials, who collect G1 or can appreciate G1. What are their thoughts on this? Because that's, I'd love to talk to someone who is 20 years younger than I am. I'm 37. And I'd love to see what their opinion is on what came before them. Like, say, Children of Beast Wars, Children of Armada, Children of Movies. What do they think of the long history of Transformers? And do they collect that kind of stuff?
Something, you know, with Sergio Garcia, who's one of our younger members, as well as Jack Bruner, joined us here a few weeks ago. I wish they could have been on here tonight for this episode, because this would have been a perfect time to talk to them. But maybe we can have a specific episode where we talk about that generation gap. What do the younger fans now, who are 20 years our junior, 15 to 20 years our junior, what do they think of the original toys? Do they even collect them? Do they even give a damn? Sergio and Jack both, they collect Combiner Wars and some of the characters that harken back to those original characters. They're updated versions, you know, and they also love the Masterpiece versions of them. But what do they think of the original toys? You know, listeners, if you're listening, what do you think? If you're, you know, part of that younger Transformer fan group that is, you know, say 15 to, let's say, 25, what do you think of the original toys? I mean, we know that they're bricks. I mean, you can't look at Broadside and say, oh, that's the most articulated thing I've ever seen. But, you know, it's not just about that. I mean, you got to think about it. You know, these are toys directed at children. And we grew up with these toys. And that's why we love them so much, because they were so damn fun. We look at them now through rose-colored glasses.
Exactly.
I remember looking, whenever I found my original collection, where my mom discovered them and brought them back out of mothballs, and I was opening them up, I was thinking, wow, these things were so cool, so fun, but man, some of these are such crappy toys. But I still love them anyway. Especially like the combiner limbs. So uber simple. And half of them didn't even look remotely like their cartoon counterpart. Very little to no articulation whatsoever. I mean, maybe you might have had shoulder articulation, and that was about it. But they are still fun toys, and they were still great toys to me. And I look back on them, and I'm like, I wouldn't trade having grown up with them for anything. But I can understand a younger fan looking back and like, wow, how did Transformers even get off the ground? They couldn't even be posed for the most part. I mean, you know, as far as combiners go, the most posable combiner was, what, Abominus? And that was just simply because of the way Hunger's legs were, or his monster necks were, that gave him the posability in combined form. But does that make it make the generation toy one toys terrible because they were not posable? They didn't have light piping, didn't have stowaway weapons. Jim, what are your thoughts on this?
Jim, is your mic muted?
Space calling Jim.
Hi. sorry about that. Yeah, I had my switch flipped. No, I was going through the different G1 combiners in my mind, trying to think if Abominus was in fact the most articulate one. I think you might be onto something there, because I was thinking like Superion's legs and that. But no, yeah, I think you're right with Abominus.
Superion could kick forward like a turkey. That's about all he can do.
Yeah. I mean, I was even thinking ones like Monstructor, no. Predaking, definitely no. So, and I'm sorry, that completely killed my train of thought. What was the question there? I got on the combiner thing and just, I lost it.
Well, does the aesthetics of Generation 1 toys, looking back now, does that disqualify them as good toys? As far as you're concerned, speaking about them objectively, I know you're a Generation 1 fan per se, but, you know, looking at them and through the eyes of, say, someone 15 to 20 years younger than us, would you say that would disqualify them as good toys?
Well, and, you know, all things relative, for their time, yeah, they were outstanding. They were the sort of things that hadn't been seen before. But by today's standards, I don't think the bulk of them would hold a candle necessarily to what we have out and available now, with the exception of maybe ones like, I don't know, like Jetfire or maybe Roadbuster or something like that. But even then, as far as looking back and asking if they're good toys, there were so many different ones in Generation 1. Some of them were playset based, like you got the MicroMaster bases, you've got Metroplex, you've got ones that were more role play, like the Six Changers, Six Shot and Quick Switch, because they had the blaster modes and that. So I mean, there's different ways that they can still be good toys even by today's standards, even if their transformation gimmick or Power Master or whatever the gimmick may be wouldn't otherwise stand up.
I think that's one of the reasons why I love some of the newer updated versions of the characters. For example, the Titan Returns Weird Wolf, or Wolf Wire, as they want to call him now, or even the Masterpieces. They took the characters that I grew up with and made them in a modern way. They're bigger. They may do more. They can pose. I've had such fun, doing these box art recreations with these toys because, I always, as a kid, I'd sit there and I'd see the box art. And sometimes I have to admit, the box art sold me on the toy. Because it just looks so cool in the box art. And I admit, there's a few times as a kid, I'd get a toy, it looked cool in the box art, I'd take the toy out and start playing with it, and I'm like, wow, this seems not what I expected. It's kind of a disappointment. But it didn't make me hate the toy. But now I can take toys and put them in the poses they were in the box art, and make them look like they did then, or like I imagine they would now. Combiner Wars Devastator. It fills that void of whenever I was a kid and I was getting all the components for Devastator, I imagined this giant robot that would tower over all my other Autobots and Decepticons. And then whenever I finally finished combining him, I'm like, wow, he's so small, and now we have Combiner Wars Titan Devastator, and then there's the Toy World Constructor, which is like Generation's Metroplex big. I mean, my girlfriend's 11-year-old daughter, the Toy World Constructor's open hand is almost as big as hers. And it just, I mean, to me, that just blows my mind as to how that can be done today. But it also fills that void. Back in the day when I was a kid, my parents would have never spent $600 on a toy, or six toys for that matter, that would combine together. But still, if I had had a toy that like literally towered over everything, it would have just fulfilled my imagination. But I think back in the day, that's another thing too. Imagination is that extra step that we need to take whenever we're looking at our toys. Back in the 80s, I used my imagination. Yeah, Broadside had fully articulated arms, legs, and feet and head. He wasn't just a brick. Whenever I'd walk him along, I imagined him actually taking steps and making those cool poses. But in reality, he couldn't do that. He just bent at the elbows and was essentially, he was a brick, kind of like this. I'm holding up a brick right now, but for that component is imagination required to make a toy good. What do you think, Rick?
So if we took a kid from today and only gave that kid toys from the 1980s, they would look at the Transformers the same way us older collectors do. Would you agree? All right, nobody agrees. Okay, so.
I was muted, sorry.
Okay.
I think they probably would.
Okay, thank you. So, if you took a kid from today, again, my daughter's example, and you gave her toys from the 80s, but now you're mixing those toys with modern toys, what does that, how does that affect the perspective of the child looking back 15, 25 years from now? I think frame of reference has a lot to do with it. That's why I have a set of old toys that I give to my children. They've got some vintage He-Man, some Transformers, some Thundercat stuff. Those are the shows they watch on DVD, amongst, you know, Sophia the First and Elena of Avalor and all those other shows. So I'm trying to share that with my kids in the hopes that when I'm an old man, my daughters, I only got the two kids that I know of, both girls so far, they will appreciate and take my collection and hopefully hang on to it after I'm dead, if it's still around.
Buy a house for it.
Yeah, well, we got the house. We got the house for the toys. It's just building the house into the toys, not the other way around. So I think it really has to do a lot with frame of reference, and imagination. There's a lot of things that kids today have that we didn't have access to as children. iPads, smartphones, so many different channels on TV. A channel that plays nothing but cartoons.
Saturday mornings were it, man.
Right. I used to watch cartoons. I used to watch G.I. Joe, Transformers, or Mask before I went to school. And then Saturday morning cartoons was it. Kids today have so much access to so much more information. Lately, I've been trying to limit the time my daughter spends on the iPad. She's 5. And make her sit down and play with toys and use her imagination. I'm always bewildered by the situations that she comes up with when she's playing with just the toys and not an electronic device. So the world is changing, and no matter what we do, no matter how much of this we share with people, we're always going to look at it through rose-colored glasses. I used to work in a collectible toy shop for 8 years, all through high school, all through college. That shop was called Play With This. Uh-huh. And it's still there. So I can appreciate. That's why I get my love of things like Major Matt Mason, of 12-inch G.I. Joes, of Shogun Warriors. I didn't have those things growing up. They came before my time. But I was around them so much that now I can appreciate them, and that some kids might look at them and see them as simple or non-articulated or can't move his elbows. But other kids might look at a Shogun Warrior and go, wow, that's a really cool robot. That's a really big robot. They might not even think that he can't move his arms or legs very well, or that he could barely turn his head. They just think, wow, that's a really cool robot. Nice. And that's what I'm trying to impart upon my children, is that doesn't necessarily need to have really cool features. Doesn't necessarily need to move the way your other action figures move. It's a cool toy, and that's it. Use your imagination. Play on.
I think that's key too, because far too often I think we underestimate the capabilities of a child's imagination, the versatility of it. Just thinking back to some of my childhood, you know, play times with, you know, some neighborhood friends, as a kid, you know, I forget who it was that had it, but one of us had a Rodimus Prime, and for some reason we used to equate the robot's height with its power level. Like, the taller the robot, the more powerful, the stronger it was. And me being the douche canoe that I was, I would take Rodimus Prime in his robot mode, fold his feet down to snap him into the trailer, and have the cannon out and pretend the cannon were additional legs just to make him stronger.
That's a great story. That's I love that story.
Right.
I for anyone who grew up in the 80s and had Muscle Men, they used to sell Muscle Men in a like a little clear plastic trash can.
Yes.
And I took the trash can and I put my R2 and C-3PO in there, and that was my escape pod. That C-3PO and R2 would land in Tatooine.
I got a funny story. And this is not necessarily Transformers related, although I did kind of do some crossover play pattern. You know, Transformers, especially Season 3, a lot of it took place in outer space. So you had a lot of spaceships and everything that they would encounter. And whenever I would play with my Transformers, you know, you'd have, let's say, Decepticons attacking, a freighter. Because they needed some Energon that was on it. Well, as a kid, you know, my parents weren't, you know, exceptionally rich or anything. I had to make do with what I had. So I would find things that would become like, you know, little personal spacecraft or giant space freighters. And I tell you what, styrofoam inserts became my
friend. Yes! Yeah. Oh, my God. Yes.
I mean, I would use like Ultra Magnus's styrofoam insert. It was a spaceship for a long time. I would draw like little lines on it or something. I had this construction playset. I can't remember. I mean, it might have even went with some Legos, but there was this construction playset that had these little round discs that I just imagined they were flying saucers. And I remember, you know, like they were like this attacking alien force that would come in and attack the humans that we didn't have toys of, but they would attack those imaginary humans, and the Autobots would come to the rescue. You know, just different things. Is using my imagination, throwing, you know, action into where there was no action. You know, just imagining what it was. And it even went back to He-Man. Whenever I collected He-Man and played with He-Man toys, you know, all the magic spells, it's like, oh, this spell makes his head turn around, you know. this spell makes his head pop off and fly away, you know, because you could do that with the toys, and it just added play value. It's just things that weren't necessarily there, but it added to the play value.
Let me tell you, when I was a kid, I played with the insert to the Fortress Maximus figure more than I did with the Fortress Maximus figure. Because I took the insert, the styrofoam insert from that Fortress Maximus box, and that was my USS Sulaco. And I would use that for my G.I. Joes, and they would drop in to LV-426, and they would fight the aliens. And then I used it as my Thundercat ship. And I would draw control panels in there and screens. And then I used it for my Star Wars characters. And then I used it for my Transformers mini cars. And then for the tapes. And I would theme things out like, oh, okay, it's time to play with the tapes and just the tapes. Or it's time to play with the mini cars and just the mini cars. And that insert was the ship for so many toys when I was growing up. I haven't seen my kids do something like that yet, but I have seen my kids take boxes and say, this is the car. So it's close. They're getting there. They're, you know, what's her face is 5 and the other one's I don't know. What's today? Tuesday. She's like 2 or something. Yeah, imagination. And I'm going to say something else too. I used to take jars of baby bottle food or baby food. So when I used to live in South America, my mom got into this habit of buying baby food that was like in the glass jars, and that would be like a snack for me, right? So then I would empty out all the jars. I'm like 8 or 9, wash them out, peel the sticker off, and then that I would line these glass jars up, and they would work as a fortress, or it would work like as an ice castle. And probably not the best idea for me to have been playing with glass, but
I had the 80s.
Yeah, it was the 80s when you can ride your bike without a helmet or stay out till 9 o'clock at night and not get kidnapped.
So what you're saying is you're actually Alex Murphy.
Yes, I'm Alex from. Are you making a RoboCop reference?
I absolutely am. Who else would be Alex Murphy? Yeah, baby food. It worked.
Yeah.
You gotta put Jim in his frame of reference there, Rick. Sometimes he comes from outer space with his thoughts and references, and you gotta sit there and go, what's he talking about? Then when he said baby food, I'm like, oh, I get it now.
Well, see, yeah, a lot of people, baby, their brains are like sponges. Mine's more like SpongeBob. So you never know what to expect from me.
Right.
Baddies, huh?
Anyway, but like you were saying with the boxes and the inserts and all that, that reminded me of something that that I myself, as well as my older brother, both used to do, because a lot of the times, you know, we would, you know, want to play, but you know, the cartoons wouldn't be on, like it wouldn't be Saturday morning, you know, they'd have golf or football or something on CBS, one of three channels we can get in on the rabbit ears. So we'd be forced to, kind of wing it, you know, left to our own devices. So what we would do sometimes is on the G1 boxes on the back, there would be the dioramas, the battle scenes. And in a lot of ways, those dioramas, that artwork added to the play value. Those became our battle scenes that we would use, and we would pretend that, you know, Grimlock was actually breathing fire in the background, you know, on Devastator, or, you know, Optimus Prime really was in the foreground.
It's,
you know,
funny he should mention that, isn't it, Rick?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you later.
Yeah. or there really were, you know, four laser beaks, you know, just little things like that. And we were pretending it would work with, you know, the figures that we had, and our imagination would fill in the gaps. And I think that things like that are honestly something that they could, I think, bring back. But I don't really see it happening. I wish they would, though. Because it was kind of neat, novelty.
Did you guys watch South Park?
Occasionally.
So the new season just started, and they have this thing called member berries, and they're grapes, and the guy pulls out these grapes, and they're called, oh, they're member berries. Like, what do you mean member berries? And it's like, and the berries talk, and they're like, hey, you remember Star Wars? Yeah, you remember Chewbacca, and you remember AT-ATs, and you remember Lando Calrissian, and like the adults like get all calm and stuff because the things, like, it's like talking about stuff that they love from their childhood. It's like, oh yeah, okay. I feel like we need like a member berry. Like, you remember Reb Signs? You remember Diecast?
You know, whenever I got
Styrofoam.
Whenever I got, and it's funny you mentioned the Reb Signs. Whenever I got the TFC Hercules. Not only did I put faction symbols on him to make, you know, the Decepticons, but I also got a set of the Repro Label Reb Signs and put all of them.
Nice.
So to me,
I love it.
To me, he is a masterpiece Devastator to me. I mean, that's, you know, he's poseable. He's got the Reb Signs. He's got that homage, you know. And I still got a few of the Reb Signs around here somewhere, I think. But I've actually considered getting some Reb Signs and putting them on my masterpieces for that very reason. Just to give them that extra, this is a G1 homage, you know. But Bringing the conversation back to the toys specifically, though, is that something else that we do to add to the toys' appeal to them, to make them a good toy, is customize them a little bit through, be it repro labels, touch-up paint. I know some people use magic markers to draw details on toys. Do you guys do those?
Very, you know, I don't do it with my G1 stuff, but I do it with Generations. I'll get a set of repro labels, or I'll get third-party add-on kits. I don't touch my G1 stuff. I feel that it's kind of too late in the game to go back and add, like, third-party upgrade sets to those figures. And there's a few, you know, like, there's a third-party upgrade set for, like, Superion or Predaking, and it's kind of too late in the game for us to worry about that stuff. But I do like to get the repro labels and the third-party add-on kits. I'll give you a really good example. Double Dealer from Generations. I got that third-party add-on kit of the missile launcher and the gun. Knocked it out of the park. Love it.
Nice.
There was even an add-on kit for G1 Devastator that actually gave him articulation, was there not?
Mm-hmm.
Crazy Debbie kit?
They had the thighs, the head with like the LED for the visor, hands, and a few other odds and ends, bits and pieces. Which actually reminds me, you mentioned Masterpiece Devastator a minute ago, you know, what you did with the rub signs and the stickers and all that. One thing that I myself wish that the Combiner Wars Titan Devastator would have had, or at least as some kind of option anyway, is the head laser, the head cannon. I know the figure's meant to be designed dominantly after the cartoon appearance, but as a kid, my brother and I, between the two of us, I had three and he had three, and we collected G2 Devastator as kids. And so for me, that the toy is what I think of mostly when I think Devastator. And that head cannon was always one of the staple pieces. And just looking at Devastator, it looks strange to me without having that just mounted on his head, or at least on his shoulder, you know, if nothing else.
It's the opposite. Kinda as like, a kid, like a, I never used that stupid head laser. I thought it looked so damn silly. I got a gun stuck in my ear, you know.
Well, I mean, I know it was mounted to his head, but I always pretended that it was more of a shoulder cannon. But I guess you could say I almost view it as many would, like the face mask on Optimus or something like that. You know, I always associate him having a head laser. So.
Age of Extinction Lockdown, where his whole head became a gun itself.
How much does somebody hate you that they turn their entire head into a gun just to shoot you and make you dead? That's hate.
That's one of my biggest laments from the actual toy that came out. It's like you can mount his rifle on his head to kind of give him that head gun thing. But I thought it would have been so much cooler if there's actually a way that, you know, maybe one could like pop up, or you could like flip one up from his chest that would make like this head cannon.
See, I never had the toy of that. I always kind of figured that it was like a panel in his torso that released the gun. So his rifle
literally just clipped onto his face.
Wow.
But by the way, the deluxe lockdown available through Hasbro Toy Shop for $4.99 on eBay.
Interesting.
And if anybody is wanting to do, and this goes back to customizing, you know, like the Titan Returns Nightbeat. Nightbeat, Generations Nightbeat was like $4.95 on Hasbro Toy Shop. I don't know if it still is or not.
But still
get,
there.
Yeah, get that cheap Nightbeat. Go on Shapeways and get you a little clip that just clips into his neck. And voila, instant headmaster. If you pick up the Titan Returns Titan Master Nightbeat.
Now, speaking of Titan's Return, I was thinking somewhere, it might have been a Facebook conversation, I don't remember now where it was, but I want to say I heard a buzz about a deluxe Nightbeat, like a proper deluxe Nightbeat coming down the pipeline sometime next year.
I wouldn't be surprised, and they even said at BotCon this year that just because there's a Titan Master of a particular character didn't mean that they were not going to do a full-size version of that character later on, that there's sure. a possibility. If I'm not, you know, for example, you know, we got a Titan Master Ape Face that had a little vehicle that turned from a jet into an ape. But that doesn't exclude the fact that we may get an actual ape face down the road. I think what they were
referring to was, who's that? There's that Titan Master that looks like Grimlock's head?
Clobber.
Clobber, yeah, thank you. And
from what I understand, that's supposed to actually be Grimlock, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, but I think that because they're doing a Grimlock, that they chose to rename that figure Clobber. As so that it didn't conflict with that. And I think maybe that's more what they were referring to.
Hmm. We might actually get full on Dinobots. Not Titan Returns, but maybe next line.
I really hope so.
I got a feeling we might see something like that soon.
I would not be complaining. These are some things that I think are good points whenever we talk about what makes a toy good. In just the three of us, we've come up with three varying differences in three opinions on what makes toys good for us. To me, I think the number one thing is playability. Well, let me backtrack a little bit. Another thing that makes a toy good for me, and this is something that I don't think anybody's really considered, but I like
sex bright appeal.
Yeah, sex appeal. Yeah, you know, I mean, if I can't Kitty Rose that some bitch, but seriously though, is color of the toy. I am a sucker for brightly colored Transformers. You know, I love Weird Wolf because he's bright. This obnoxious bright yellow wolf. Like much like Plasticon loves his G2 and those crazy colors. I'm a sucker for it too, but if a toy is yellow, a bright yellow, a bright orange, translucent, red, I tend to prefer those toys more because, you know, I like the brightly colored toys. That doesn't mean to say I hate it if it's, or dislike it entirely if it's a darker color, but I tend to prefer brightly colored toys, and I don't know if anybody else feels that way. What do you guys think about colors of toys?
So you prefer like movie Fear Swoop?
Fear Swoop, trying to place that one.
Revenge of the Fallen Hooligan, basically.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I love Hooligan. I mean, I've got one sealed and loose. So, but yeah, I mean, those the crazy colors. I'm a sucker for them. You know, I once took a picture that your sister commented on once. Said, "Look at all the eyesores," and it was like nothing but yellow and orange toys. You know, but it was like all that yellow and orange in one shot. You know, it does it for me. And I'm wondering if there's anybody else there out there that feels that way.
You know, I'm a sucker for Takara paint apps. It's because all these galleries of people who are comparing the Hasbro version to the Takara version, just to show you the difference, they really invest because of their market. And because they know they need to export a certain amount of these, they really invest in that paint application. And I'd like to take a moment to recognize our sponsors right now. Captured Prey, who does excellent duct work. They also sell toys or something. I don't know. Duron, you're better at it than I am.
So what CapturePrey.com,
great toys, great prices, great service. CapturePrey.com, where you can save even more with the CapturePrey loyalty program. Spend $150 or more, and you get free domestic shipping with CapturePrey.com. And also, let's not forget, Mega Toy Fan. Maximize your collection while minimizing your costs with MegaToyFan.com. You can find Mega Toy Fan at all the biggest robot and toy conventions year-round, such as TFCon coming up next month. I'll be there. And I know that Mega Toy Fan and Capture Prey will both be there. So be sure to come by both booths and tell us hi and how much you love or hate the show. You know, we're trying to make ourselves better. So let us know and buy some stuff from Capture Prey and Mega Toy Fan.
Flawless.
Yeah.
Plus victory.
Yes.
That Orson guy, man.
Friendship.
I don't know. You ever share a room with Orson?
Unfortunately. Aaron? He farts in his sleep.
Man, I bet you that guy snores like a bear on acid.
He does.
Yeah.
Yeah. He also snorts acid, too. Going back to color of toys, is that a factor at all for either of you guys?
You know, it's not so much color. I love G2. I guess it has to do with the color, but I don't love it because I think it's, oh, this was the best part of Transformers. I think it's so odd and curious that it kind of has this, what I call the South Florida style color scheme. I'm very particular about details, and I love paint applications, and I love stickers, and the more stickers and the more paint, the better. And I'm a big fan of repro labels, and I'm a big fan of the way Takara invests in to painting their figures to look a certain way and looked.
Getting the I would Takara say, blaster and Soundwave from Titan Returns because they just look so much better.
Yeah, there's. I understand. You know, look, I work there. I understand why certain things are made. Certain decisions are done a certain way. You never want to see how the sausage is made, and I got to see how the sausage was made, and it's very frustrating. And I understand where Hasbro's coming from, but Takara just kills it when it comes to paint application. And for a collector, for some collectors out there who have a limited amount of money to invest, they hold out and they wait for the Takara version because it's just that much sexier. Yeah.
The Power Master Optimus Prime or Jin Rai case, a completely different toy almost than what we get here in the United States.
Oh, good example. Well, that's a whole different situation right there, man. That's not just a redeco situation. That's a major retool. Yeah.
New legs, the whole bit. It's taller.
We wonder, it's like, okay, if Takara is going to go ahead and do that anyway, then why didn't, and Hasbro knows it, it's like, why didn't Hasbro go in and say, okay, if you're going to go ahead and do that, regardless of what our decision is, why don't we just help pay for the molding and tooling and just bring it over here too? Why does that not happen?
There's lots of reasons why that doesn't happen. And I can only speak to my time at Hasbro. I can't speak to why that happens today. But Takara wants to purposely make things different because they have such a small market in Japan. They need those export dollars and they need to make them different. And they sometimes hold things back or say that, you can't use that. Or at least not yet because we're going to make this or we're going to do it this way. And they need to expand their market, and they know a certain amount of figures are going to get exported, and they have to cater to that market in order to survive.
already are going into it saying, okay, there's going to be some Americans that are, or not just Americans, but people outside of Japan that are going to eat this up. So they make accordingly.
Yes, they do. But at the same time, they leave the door open for those tools to be used later. Yet Hasbro has to, in some cases, if it's going to be like a mass release figure, they have to retroactively pay for the use of that tooling. Botcon has gotten away with being able to use some of those parts without being charged extra, because there's only going to be, you know, a few hundred of them made.
My brain just started firing off, and I started realizing, oh my God, we could get a Nucleon Quest Genrai, a Fire Guts Genrai out of this, and I'm like, I'm already tingling just at the thought of that. What do you guys think? Would you totally be into those molds again, just for those colors?
If you're I'm a Seeker guy. I love Seekers. I love having Seekers in all different colors, and you got to have them all. So when it comes to that particular mold, from what I've seen that Takara has done with it, yeah, if they do the Fire Guts, if they do the Nemesis version, if they do a Diet Pepsi version, I got to have them.
Or Coca-Cola or Jack Daniels.
Well, just release it as a platinum edition and use the translucent plastic and just release it as a Crystal Pepsi version.
Crystal Pepsi.
You're evil.
Totally. Yes, and only leave it available to stores for like 2 months.
Yeah. And it'd still be sitting there because it's way overpriced.
Yeah, that's it.
Like Masterpiece Bumblebee. I've been seeing posts on Facebook, people finding Masterpiece Bumblebee, and they're like, I'm not about to pay $70 domestically for this toy. You know, it's right. Like you can get the Japanese version for like $15, $20 less depending on where you go.
That's not so much Hasbro's fault. That's more of Toys R Us's fault and just being greedy.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And not understanding the international market.
But
Toys R Us tends to do that with quite a few things,
unfortunately. But I think that will kind of wrap up our discussion on what makes a toy good. Anybody or any of you guys think have any extra thoughts on the subject before we wrap up totally?
Well, right offhand, you know, we mentioned that Power Master Prime, and then the difference with the Takara version. It got me thinking, you know. The changes made to the Takara version, you know, made him taller, you know, all this and that to make him more like Jinrai. And I got to thinking, what if later on down the road in a future wave we end up with an Apex Bomber?
For Titan Returns?
Yeah. Hmm. To interconnect with Power Master Prime,
well,
or to be a standalone toy.
Jim, be careful what you ask for. You just might get it.
I'd be cool with it, even if it's third party.
But, you know, I want to say that these points and many others are, you know, the whole realm of what makes a toy good varies throughout the fandom. And, you know, we can sit here and pound on what we think is a good toy. And I guarantee you, all three of us could have a consensus. Oh, that's a great toy. That looks great. But then there's the camp out there that thinks that same toy that we think is great looks awful. And why do they think it's awful? Again, I want to appeal to the fans. If you listen to the audio version of this, and I hope the audio version of this is way better than last week's, but if you have an opinion on this, what makes a good toy for you, and give us some examples, tweet us on our Twitter account at TFYLP, or better yet, post them on our Facebook group, Transformers for Your Listening Pleasure. I do want to give a little foreshadowing. Hopefully, I believe next week I'm going to be able to have something in hand to show to everybody. I mean, we've seen some, I think, CGI pictures of it recently, and some preliminary pictures. I'm actually going to have something in hand. It's a production sample, so be on the lookout for that next week. It's going to be pretty cool. I've actually held it already, and I can't wait to get my hands on the full release version of this. So
spoilers, it's a masterpiece. Skids and Mudflap.
No, meow. But that's all I'm going to say. be sure to tune in next week. And again, I hope the audio and video for this episode was a lot better than last week. We're keeping on tweaking things, and I appreciate the feedback that everybody's given us on YouTube and everything. We just keep trying to make it better. So for Jim, Rick, and myself, and everybody else on the TFYLP crew, I want to thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next time on TFYLP. Good night, everybody.
Good night, all.
Yeah, whatever.
This has been Transformers for your listening pleasure, a presentation of TFTalk.net. We'd like to thank you for listening and ask that you please rate us on your favorite podcast outlet and share us with your friends. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at TFYLP. Email us at podcast@TFYLP.com. This is Paul Lighting, and on behalf of TFYLP, we'd like to thank you again for listening, and we hope you'll join us next time for another TFYLP.